Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to The Hotbed. You're listening to our podcast.
I'm Aniki Somerville.
And I'm Lisa Williams.
And we are The Hotbed Collective. We're a gang of merry maidens who are hell-bent on making the world a better place, one orgasm at a time. Now, we started this podcast because of two reasons. One, we've discovered there's a massive orgasm gap between men and women.
30%.
30%? It's too large! And the other one is that we thought there was a lot of talk going on about kind of extreme sex, or, you know, obviously you can access porn online, you can have a look at all kinds of permutations of sex. But what about just the everyday, having a quick shag under the duvet on a Sunday morning with a crumpet stuck to your chin? There's none of that kind of sex. So that's what we've formed the collective for, to talk about that. And hopefully you'll join us every week and listen and have fun and join in. Thanks.
This is Series 4, Episode 2, Only an Actual Movie Star. Because we've only got an actual movie star in the house, haven't we, Aniki?
And I'm so jealous that you got to meet her.
And her is Rose McGowan.
Rose McGowan!
She of Grindhouse fame, Charmed fame,
Scream
fame.
Ex-Marilyn Manson girlfriend
fame.
And, of course, hugely in the press because of the whole Me Too Harvey Weinstein monster
movement. That's right. Now, we like to aim quite high on the Hotbed podcast, and why not we put out interview requests for lots of people. And let's do a little bit of manifesting now, because we still want to have Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
I still want to have Sharon Horgan, please come on our podcast.
We still want Lily Allen. You can't see this, but I'm doing a kind of manifesting move with my arms.
I really want to believe that manifesting can work. And it's funny because at the bottom of the bed, I have a vision board, which someone told me is good because you wake up in the morning and you look at it. And then when I looked at it closely, because I did it just after the baby was born, it's all pictures of women in active like wear running without children. So I thought, why have I set myself this kind of vision of me childless but doing a lot of exercise, and there's a lot of me outside and long hair.
You'll get there. Who else are we manifesting for? I'm manifesting for
Ruby Wax, Janet Street Porter,
Candice Brathwaite, and Papa B.
I would like Kristen Wiig, or is it Kristen Wiig bridesmaids lady, Tina Fey.
Should we get Kristen's name right before we manifest?
Maybe we should do. I mean, Oprah Winfrey would be a good one.
We love Oprah. So we manifest a lot. And during this manifesting session, I just emailed Rose McGowan's publicist because I thought, well, why not? And she replied. She only just replied 2 days before she was available for an interview.
I know. And that was kismet, really.
Mm-hmm. So Rose was in the country. She is kind of semi-based in the UK now, which is pretty incredible. Welcome to lunch. She's based in London for half the time, not officially, but she is here a lot. And she has a book called Brave, which has just come out in paperback. If you ever think you're having a bad day, read Rose McGowan's book, Brave, because that woman has seen and been through a lot. She was raised in a cult. Did you know that? Raised in a cult in Italy. She didn't look in a mirror till she was 10. She didn't know she was a girl until she was 10 because they raised her with no ego. There was all kind of dodgy stuff happening in this cult, as you can probably imagine. They escaped. She moved to America. Her mum had a good-for-nothing boyfriend. Then she got into an abusive relationship, and it just goes on and on and on. But what kind of strike comes through is that she's got such a fierce personality. She's so passionate. Obviously an amazing actress, which I think is probably informed by, you know, this fierce way of growing up and having to protect herself. She can really imagine what it's like for other people and really get into a role. And she talks about Hollywood and man. She is disillusioned with the silver screen. She is really, she compares it to a cult and a cult which women are used as, you know, the currency. And she was part of that, an unwilling part of that. And she's really, well, I ask her and you'll hear this. She's not angry anymore, but she, I feel like she wrote the book and sat down and went blah onto the page. And it's really an amazing read. So I recommend that. That's brave.
And she was on, actually, she made a documentary series as well about the tour and the sort of promotion of that book. And one of the things that I found quite sort of really took me aback was that loads of people, like when she was, I think she goes and does a book talk in a big bookstore in the States, and people are quite combative and really attack her. It's like, it's because she's on this platform. They were kind of basically, they felt like they were throwing more aggression and more critique her way. And I sort of thought in a lot of ways, it's hard because she's stood up for something. She's quite vulnerable. You can see her vulnerability in the film. Even though she's strong, she breaks quite easily because of what's happened to her. And yet people seem to think it's perfectly okay to just throw a load of, you know, shit in her direction.
Yeah, because who wants to criticise Hollywood? Who wants to, she's turned her back on it. And who would turn their back on Hollywood? You know, we're raised to think this is our dream. You know, a dream state of being is to be a movie star on the red carpet. She bloody hated the red carpet, as you'll hear. Now, it's interesting because we started the Hotbed podcast around about the time that Me Too was really gaining traction. And I remember you said, you know, you said to me a lot, I don't know whether we should be covering this or not, didn't you?
I just think it's always difficult. And we've had that actually when we've been writing and talking about content generally. Once you go into kind of harassment and abuse and those kind of areas, and I think most women have been through different levels or degrees of that, but I always feel that I'm not fully qualified to wade in there. And it's quite a morass, because what offends one person might not be offensive to me. And because my, I suppose because my thing is often to make light of things and to joke about stuff. And it's actually something you can't really joke about. It's not funny. And actually, if it is going to be funny, it's got to be the person that it's happened to that makes that kind of quip. But it's funny because I think when we were talking about it, I was going out to lunch, I think once, Sunday lunch with a group of fairly kind of normal parents. And I was just amazed that as people kept drinking, wine and stuff, and you know, it was a nice day, a couple of the men really waded in there, just sort of saying, do you know what, this bloody Me Too thing, it's ridiculous, it's got to, you know, abnormal proportions. I don't know what to do at work anymore. If I ask someone for a drink, are they going to think that I'm trying to come on to them? You know, it's impossible, and women need to kind of stop it now. There's clear boundaries in terms of what you can and can't do. But the example this dad was using was saying, can I ask one of my colleagues for a drink after work? Or is that going to be something that's seen as being, you know, predatory and disgusting? And I said, well, you know, it depends what your motivation is and how you are. You should be able to go for a drink with somebody and it's fine.
Yeah, and it depends on power structures. So me and my partner met at work and we were very much on the same level, slash I may have been slightly more senior than him. He might disagree with that. We were probably equal, but I was there before him and we got together, but it was in a sort of very natural way. It happened out of work when we were socializing. We were basically the same pay grade, the same age. I wasn't fearful of him. I didn't feel as if he propositioned me. By the way, I also invited him on a date.
See, I'm now seeing...
And he could have said no, to be fair. You think I'm now the predatory
one? I'm seeing you as Indecent Proposal with Demi Moore. I'm seeing that character.
I mean, you'll have to... I can't tell his story. But he could have said no and he wouldn't have had any fear of me sacking him, reporting him, maybe shaming him, you know, and all of these things are what plays a part of it. It's, you know, is this sexual or romantic proposition? Has it got any impact on how that other person might be feeling sort of personally and professionally? So anyway, this is Rose. She was wonderful, cropped hair, very sweet. Very unassuming. She came and did our podcast. She also did Sentimental Garbage, a podcast about chick lit. And so we were really happy to have her in the studio, in bed with us. And here is what she had to say. Rose McGowan, we have an actual film star right here on the hotbed. Can you believe it? Nice to meet you, Rose.
So nice to meet you. I'm glad to be in bed with you.
Absolutely. It's the hottest bed around.
I realized that sounded weirder than I'd actually intended, but that's okay.
Well,
we can have a fantasy bed that's like a giant bed, and we can occupy very far ends of it, maybe.
Listen, listeners at home, just imagine we're in a kind of pink chiffon double poster bed, would it be?
Double poster, maybe floating in the air.
I like the sound of that. A little bit like Princess and the Pea.
With pink clouds.
Lots of different mattresses.
Yeah.
It's quite comfy. I'm comfortable.
I'm such a Princess and the Pea person, too. I can feel the tiniest thing. It's the most annoying.
Are you a sort of hard mattress or a soft mattress?
You know what I think they should make a mattress? I'm somewhere, I think, in the middle, but I feel like for women with breasts, they should make a mattress that, like, you can lay on your stomach and have holes for your boobs.
A bit like the massage table with the hole cut out for your
face. But for your chest?
Yes,
because I like sleeping on my stomach, but also I don't want my chest to go through my back.
There are some mattress makers listening. I think we count them among our demographics, so who knows? Year or two. So we're so happy to talk to you because we talk about sex on screen a lot, and we talk about what needs to change a lot, and we talk about the male gaze a lot. And so, I mean, you are the perfect person to talk about this. Rose, as I've just explained to listeners, has written a wonderful book called Brave, which lots of you may have already read or read about. And I mean, it takes down Hollywood. It takes down the male gaze, let's say. Would you say that's accurate?
I would say that is accurate. I think it I think there's just a lot that goes to the male gaze in Hollywood that people don't think of. They think when you hear male gaze, it sounds like it's one male instead of a whole giant, and the women too that support it. You know, they're very much involved in the male gaze as well.
So how would you describe the male gaze? Because when we try and talk about it in academic theory, it can get quite confusing. So do you have a sort of shortcut to your understanding of it?
Sure. And my understanding of it is really that it's almost as if you're outside of your own body looking at yourself with a man's eyes, you know, and or a cliched man's eyes, I should say. And that's something that I think is really detrimental and harms girls and women and boys and men and everybody, you know.
Just changes the way we look at the world completely.
It is. In my book, I talk about, you know, how the mirror Hollywood gives you to look into from your earliest age that you can remember. You know, it's a pretty messed up mirror. And it's one of those things where I know a lot of the people that are making those mirrors for you. And I really don't think they should be in your head.
And in some ways, it can be enjoyable. I mean, the movie Some Like It Hot with Marilyn Monroe, I mean, there's the classic male gaze scene there where she's Jell-O on springs, walking down the road, the bottom's wiggling, she's getting on a train, the boys are looking, the audience is looking.
But I think Billy Wilder did that in such a way, that's the director and writer with I.L. Diamond of that film. I think they did it. It's a super progressive movie on gender politics, actually. And also, I think, one of the most flawless comedies of all time. And It what was so great is that the Tony Curtis character who's wooing Marilyn Monroe, at one point, for those of you who haven't seen it, they have to dress up as women to the male character so they can get a job with an all-women's band, and they're on the run from the mob, and they see Sugar Cane, who's Marilyn Monroe, and then, yes, Jell-O on springs. I think it's really a progressive film, and that's where you can have the male gaze. It's not always bad. It's okay to have a male perspective on something. It's that when it's seedy and kind of, I don't know how to describe it other than that icky feeling, you know, that feeling that something's not quite right, but you're not sure what it is.
I think of it as the feeling of being looked up and down wherever I go, even if I'm not in a situation where I'm inviting that, you know, because that's how we're used to seeing women.
Well, that it's okay. This is what you're here for.
Exactly. It's window dressing, and that we can always pick on a woman for what she looks like.
I write about in my book, Entertainment Tonight, and all the other TV cameras that would be on the red carpet after you get done with all the flash photography, which is its own nightmare. You head to where they have, you know, the moving cameras, and you go there and they would pan you up and down and make you turn around for them. And I talk about in my book also how, you know, the photographers are always like, over the shoulder, so they can get the side of your face and your ass at the same time. And I was on a red carpet when Entertainment Tonight did the panning up and down thing, and they said, Cate Blanchett said she hates it when we do that. What do you think, Rose? And I said, I think you're a visual rapist. So I don't think that aired.
I mean, it must be so difficult inside that machine because you obviously want the movies to do well. And I remember I used to be a showbiz reporter on the red carpet in the press pen asking questions and was for a short spell. And I remember Julia Roberts was promoting a movie and she just decided to wear a black trouser suit. That's just what she wanted to wear. And the photographers were absolutely livid because they had nothing. They were like, this photo is not going to sell. This movie's not going to do well. The picture didn't make many papers the next day. So they were right. They were absolutely right. And actually, it's that image of someone in a really sparkling, bright dress, very revealing, that will guarantee press inches the next day.
I felt like I was doing drag as a woman every day, and especially on the red carpet. That was the worst. I would almost throw up before I would go on, and my leg would shake so fiercely underneath the dress that, you know, I had to steady my hands. And then sometimes it looked like I'm laughing, but it was really like a kind of a hysterical sound would come out of my mouth, and I would cover it with a smile. Because they're all, I don't know if they do this in Europe as much, but in America they scream at you. Over here. And when aggression is coming towards your body and you're standing there like an idiot in this stupid evening gown and these dumb high heels, no offense to the evening gown wearers out there in the world, but normally if someone's screaming at you, let alone 100 men, it's primarily men, you either yell back or you run away. You don't just absorb it with your stupid hand on your hip cocked out like, hi, Mr. Man. And that's how all those photos had to go.
You also talk in your book about the audition process being very invasive and intrusive. There's a British actress and writer called Sarah Soleimani, and she's written a brilliant piece on this as well, where she basically says, as an actress, particularly when you're starting out, you can be called anywhere at all.
Yeah.
You don't know whether it's safe. You don't know who's going to be there. And yet, if you want a job, apparently that's what you have to do. And if they tell you you need to take your clothes off or kiss someone or whatever, well, where's the line between what's actually required and what's then pushing into abuse?
The first audition I ever had to test our chemistry, and I was discovered, so I was never trying to be an actor. Not that that gives it any right to do bad things or degrade you, but I really was a neophyte. I had no clue what was going on. I was just doing it for rent money. But they tested my chemistry with the male actor, and he was laying flat on his back, and they laid me flat on top of him, like chest to chest. And he had an erection, which is not his problem, but I just snapped out of my body and floated up to the ceiling, and I guess they thought we had chemistry since I got the part. But I remember thinking, I was not anticipating laying on an erection today.
No, it's not what most people expect when they go into work.
Or a job interview.
A job interview.
Right. Precisely. Lay on an erection. It's and that, it just, and that's how it gets normalized. And I always say what goes on behind the scenes in Hollywood is what happens on screen is what happens in the world. So people think Hollywood is this isolated territory that's just weird and stays to itself, but it doesn't. It's America's number one export.
I mean, what we were saying about going to strange places to audition and not knowing if that place would be safe and who would be there, we could say every day for a cleaner, for example.
Yeah.
You know, they every day go into people's houses. They don't know who's going to be there.
Yeah, it's really scary. There's a lot of, and that's, you know, primarily women in that job. And you don't know. It's not, yeah, that's very interesting, the parallel between a housekeeper and an actor who has to, or an actress who has to, it was so many hotels, so many hotels, because the person staying there, they have a living room and that's where you would meet them and they would have the camera set up in there. And it's mind-bending how bizarre and not okay it is, but how okay it is when you're there just because this is how we've always done it. And that's why I wanted to kind of crack the illusion. Just because we've always done it this way doesn't mean we have to do it that way.
You talk about being raised in Italy and being raised with a really appreciation of art. Yeah. And I presume that extends to cinema. And I hope that your experience hasn't, it doesn't sound as if it's diminished your love of it as an art form. So presumably you want...
It has in some ways.
Has it?
Not classic film. Although I don't like to imagine what happened to those people back then. It was probably quite horrific. Shirley Temple once said when she was 16... she was taken to the studio head's office, and it was Daryl Zanuck at 20th Century Fox, a studio she built and, you know, had massive territory of buildings and this, and it was like built off her work as a child. And she'd been warned, unlike me, Shirley got warned, if he kicks off his shoes under the table, run. And he kicked off his shoes. It's those things. What would I like to see that's different? I mean, on a bad day, I'd say burn it down. I think the very easy answer to that is a 50-50 split in directors. And the DGA, the Directors Guild of America, is around 95-96% male. Mm. And that statistic hasn't changed since 1946. So it's, and that's primarily white male. So you're getting this really narrow, narrow, narrow view of your world. I would like to see that change.
I suppose our theory is that if you change what's at the top, it affects everything, you know, from the quality of the film. And strangely, the...
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
University of California, I think, do some research into diversity in cinema, and they have found that the more diversity there is in terms of
the
not
more
just
money you make.
Yes, exactly. So, you
that
know, films
seems logical.
I know.
Like the world. Like, I don't know. I walk outside, I see people, and I'm like, yeah, it should look like this.
It's just insane that
it's,
it doesn't.
It's literally insane, and that they have constant, you know, there's this group called Women in Film, and they have all these luncheons where they just cite statistics. And I'm like, ladies, what are you doing? If you haven't achieved any advancement over your methods are not working, I suggest you try something else. Mm. And so for me, I've heard from I've had some actresses come up to me, unknowns, just, you know, trying to make it. And they see they feel so much safer on set now. And they're being listened to in meetings. And I heard a writer who's in an all-male writer's room. She's like, it's the first time I'm being listened to. So I think there is. I'm not in Hollywood anymore, so I've certainly – I'm both ostracized and self-ostracized, but I hope it's becoming different. I don't think – you know, they now have intimacy advisors on sets, which basically means somebody to run the sex scenes, which would have been really nice when I was having to do that stuff. Mm-hmm. But altogether, most sex scenes aren't necessarily – pertinent or germane. Like if you look at The Big Short, right, you have Margot Robbie sitting in a tub explaining boring economic stuff. She's like, got your attention, didn't I? You know, and she's sitting naked in the tub. I mean, she's got water around her, but it's just one of those like utilizing a woman to make a man's point. And that gets so dull, I think. I think we're all really bored of it collectively.
And I think it can lead to really boring sex as well in real time, you know, in real life. Because if what you see on screen is boring and not really geared around female pleasure, ultimately that's what you get.
But not even male pleasure, because in the movies, the men get off in like 15 seconds. So the woman's supposed to be like, oh, that's amazing. And whereas if that happened in real life, I don't know that, you know, the rest of the movie would happen. So to speak.
That's true. It could take up an entire feature-length movie.
It could take an entire feature-length movie. You can't really do that. But I don't think in real life, if I was having sex with someone and it lasted 15 to 20 seconds, I don't think the rest of our story would be going on necessarily.
I think one of our problems, certainly one for me, is growing up watching a lot of cinema where, exactly as you say, there's a 15-minute bit of, you know, quite standard sex, and it leads to this very quick and easy simultaneous orgasm. And I was just so relieved as I grew up reading about sex, finding out that actually for only 20% of women can orgasm from standard intercourse, you know, vaginally. And actually 80%, it's more to do with other areas such as the clitoris, etc. And I mean, I know it's difficult, obviously, to show in a film, but it would just be nice to see sometimes, don't you think?
You know, that would be nice, and or a discussion about it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Just something that brings some slight modicum of reality into it. Mm-hmm. You can also make reality sexy. Mm-hmm. You know, wouldn't it be amazing if there was like a 90-minute sex scene that was actually really much more about the woman? Mm-hmm. And it could be an educational film.
Could be, or an erotic film.
Those, I mean, what the hell with the 50 Shades of Grey crap? What? What? I don't know if Hollywood knows how to do eroticism.
Have you seen any good sex on screen ever? Have you got any scenes or moments in film that you have found sexy or that you think has done well?
I think 9 and a Half Weeks was really sexy. Mm-hmm. And there is a movie called, I'm blanking out on the name of it, but what was this? It eventually wound up having all these sex scenes, which just got so dull because you saw them so many times. But in the beginning of the movie, when she first meets, it's Jane March and Tony Leung, I think it's set in China. And their first time they're meeting, they're in the back of a car and their hands lightly go towards each other and almost just one hovers above the other. And you feel this. You could feel the energy crackling between them, and I thought that was incredibly sexy.
Yeah, it can just be a moment, can't it? Something suggested.
Yeah.
I see that you've done short films recently, or more recently. Is that something that interests you still as an art form more than maybe long form?
I don't know if it's long form or short form. I directed a film that you can see on YouTube. I put it up. It's called Dawn, D-A-W-N. If you Google that in my name, you can see it. And it's a full feature in 19 minutes. What I mean by that is like a full three structure act. Mm-hmm. And it's set in 1961. I did the set design as well. And it's about really what happens to a girl when we send her out into the world with no protection and politeness as her only asset. And politeness kills.
Hmm. It's the idea of having to always please people, to never upset people, and it can be so damaging to a young girl.
Oh,
and an adult.
It damaged me, and I have a very, you know, kind of strong constitution. But even with that, you don't want to be rude.
Hmm.
But I would rather be rude to someone and have them be mad at me for being rude than to get raped or lose my life.
Mm. We talk about raising our children. I've got two boys, and I feel very strongly about not making them kiss or cuddle anyone. So it's quite, I mean, it's still very normal in the UK, I can only talk about, to say to children, boys and girls, you know, kiss auntie so-and-so, kiss uncle so-and-so. And I just think, what lesson are we showing children, you know, that they have to show affection to an adult if they don't want to? So I tend to say, you know, high five so-and-so. I might say I'll give so-and-so a cuddle or high five them and give him a choice, you know. But even in something like
that's smart. It's that also, it's deprogramming. Well, you're not programming in that case. For yourself, you're deprogramming. Mm. For them, you're programming. I think that's brilliant, actually.
I'm trying to, but, you know, it's interesting because something like that just seems so harmless. You know,
it should be harmless, but it's not. Yeah. Because it can lead into, if they do meet someone that is a predator, that's part of how it starts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's part of grooming.
Mm-hmm.
And grooming is a really serious thing.
Mm. Especially with the starting out with apparent bad behavior, you know, how terrifying, you know, children are taught not to ever be in trouble.
Yeah.
And yet they are sometimes, you know, everyone's naughty from time to time. And then to be able to use that over someone is, I think, very terrifying.
Yeah, mind control is a terrible thing.
Mm. How angry are you still on a scale of 0 to 10 about everything that happened? I mean, specifically your experience in Hollywood, because actually from your book, there's lots of, you know, things you could be angry about and probably are.
Yeah. On a scale of 1 to 10, I feel like in the last year and a half, I got a lot of that out.
Mm.
And it was a hard, brutal year and a half, and preceded by a lot of, are you allowed to curse?
Yes.
Shit. I was like, wait, okay.
It's podcast.
Okay. And I have a right to that anger, you know, and when it comes, and women, especially women, I think are so afraid of being angry. I think they think they're going to be angry forever or something. It's like a thunderstorm in the sky in the summer, you know, and it flashes and it passes. And sometimes I do shoot fireballs.
Mm.
And sometimes it's necessary too. Mm-hmm. The way I feel like I almost bullied society into going forward was by utilizing a rightful amount of anger. Injustice angers me.
Mm.
The abuse of power angers me. But on a scale of 1 to 10 right now, like today, I'm currently at a 2.
Okay.
I'm pretty chill.
What's helped you get to that stage? And I'm not discrediting being angry, because I agree with you that actually it's good to be confrontational sometimes, and especially about things that matter. But, you know, how do you get the sort of calm, you know, back into your life?
It's almost like the last year and a half and that whole media trip and all of that, it just, I burnt out, and it was so traumatic that I've been in kind of a healing phase right now, because I just couldn't keep living that way. It's simply too much. My body was suffering. I had a like this from the beginning of my neck under my skull to the middle of my back. It was raised up about 6 inches, and it was solid cramping knots. And I looked like a hunchback. Mm. And so it had a lot of physical effect on me. My hair started falling out. My skin looked rough. Like it had a lot of deleterious effect on me. But fighting every day will do that too.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm in a really stable relationship with a wonderful human, and that's helping a lot. I don't want to put, you know, certainly my mental health on somebody else, but she has brought a lot of joy into my life, and they've a lot of calmness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They call me fire, and their name's Rain, so I call them water.
That sounds lovely.
Yeah.
You're probably bringing something to the relationship as well that's very calming.
Definitely. I don't know about calming, but yeah, probably calming. Yeah, we've only had 2 tiffs, one on my side and one on Rain's side in the year we've been together. Yeah.
Could we just talk about the Me Too movement, which you were one of many voices that helped get momentum behind it and helped get people share their stories? I mean, everyone, my Facebook feed was, you know, full of it, and Twitter. Yeah. Do you find, has it, from your point of view, made progress? And how do we act upon it? Because it seems as if some people are treating it like, oh, you know, a bit of a phase.
Oh, thank God that's over.
Yeah.
You know, I was, I was on book tour when the Me Too hashtag kicked off, and media calls it a movement, but movements usually have a figurehead and a leader and a plan to go forward, and this is not the case here. This was simply a communication tool. Then the media started calling it a movement, making it sound like there are women with pitchforks on the street. That's not the case. I haven't seen any.
No.
And it also, it really pissed me off on Twitter when they put the Me Too icon as pink.
Mm.
I found that so offensive, and deeply offensive, because I know so many males who've been hurt, so many trans people have been hurt, so many, you know what I mean? Like, what? Like, that bothered me.
Mm.
I have seen real progress, though. I think we will continue to see progress, not in terms of outing people or bringing men down or bringing power abusers down. Hopefully that'll happen if people are abusing power. That shouldn't be tolerated. But in terms of getting people to see each other as people and like kind of dialing back the male gaze. And, you know, I have a group of male friends and they got together and they were talking with each other about times they'd gone too far, times they'd pushed it, times they'd, this is exactly what I just wanted people to have a new conversation. I was really bored of the same conversation that society seemed to be having around this topic, gender, all of that stuff. I was like, can't we get something new? This is really dull. And also there's a lot of shit that's going on behind the scenes that everybody knows about and everybody in their own way is complicit by not doing anything about it. And I thought, if not me, whom?
Absolutely. Is there anything else that you want to say about your book or about anything that we've talked about? Sex, relationships, gender, cinema, patriarchy. I mean, we've covered quite a few things.
You know, I think it's really just about unwiring your mind and looking at why the information that you're being given is being given to you and who's benefiting. Because if it's not you, then it's somebody else. And you have a right to stand up for yourself and be counted and know your worth. One of the things I did when I raised myself was if I was in any situation where I didn't know what to do, I would imagine what my better self would do in that situation, and I would imitate it until it came true. And that's kind of how I grew myself. I came up, my movement was never Me Too. It was about bravery. And it was about seeing if I could get the world to be 10% more brave. It's an arbitrary number I came up with, but I really think that it's doable. The last lines in my book are, I know you can, I know you have it in you, just by being brave. And that's really my message for the world. And being brave, it doesn't mean you're not scared. It just means you do the scary thing anyway. And that it's okay to go through it. And that every time you go through it, the next time you face a hardship, you'll be like, oh my God, I did that. Look at me. Watch me go. Go you.
100%.
Yeah.
Rose, it's been lovely talking to you.
It's been lovely talking to you.
And we hope to see you again. You're always welcome in my bed, in my four-poster bed.
Floating on pink clouds.
And next time, hopefully, we meet, I will have found someone to, well, I will have maybe done it myself, made this mattress with the boob holes in it.
Yeah, mattress with boob holes.
So I actually wanted to talk to Rose, not just about Me Too, but also about sex on screen, because we talk about it a lot on The Hotbed. And I think if you can see it, you can be it. And we need to see normal sex on screen. More, we need to see bad sex, we need to see realistic sex, we need to see more of the female orgasm happening realistically and not just with a few quick thrusts. Have you seen any good sex on screen recently? It was tricky with Rose because she doesn't really watch TV anymore apart from Jeopardy and game shows and crime, real crime. So I couldn't have the in-depth chat about Fleabag and Russian Doll as I wanted to. But what have you seen, Anarchy, recently that you've enjoyed?
It's funny because Fleabag's just started again, hasn't it, with the next series. And that probably is one where, you know, the sex does feel quite realistic. And I suppose, yeah, Russian Doll I liked because it was all kind of quite drunken, shambolic, messy sex. And clearly, like, the woman is kind of calling the shots on it. But I still think there's a lot of way, there's a lot of work to be done, because I still get really bored of just seeing this very sort of standard stuff, which tends to be sort of guy on top and woman sort of moaning and groaning before she's even got her clothes off. I've got two friends who, they're big fans of ITV drama, and we got a WhatsApp group, and they keep sort of going, oh, there's this on. It's usually got, is it Suranne Jones in?
Suranne Jones, yeah.
It's usually got her in. And it's always a bit like that. It's kind of, or even actually, what was the Night Porter with Tom Hiddleston? There was a bit in there where I just thought, that's ridiculous. You know, the position where they show the guy picks up the woman and they have sex against the wall. And the thing is, if you're kind of like a size 16, that's not going to happen. These kind of silly positions where a man picks you up and it's very balletic, and it obviously looks good on film. But has anyone actually done that before?
Russian Doll, it's not really about sex, but what I love about it is
It's Netflix, isn't it?
Yeah. Yep, it's a Netflix show. It stars Natasha Lyonne, who is in Orange is the New Black, and I think she was in American Pie. She's a really interesting actress. She plays a software, she plays a software developer. She creates 3D characters.
Computer games.
And for computer games. And the story is kind of a bit like a computer game, because she dies and comes back to life. And it's a bit like having lots of lives on a computer game, and you have to play the same thing over and over again. And work out how to get to the next level. That's what I thought of the structure. And I just loved her in it because she had her own issues and her own demons to deal with, but she was funny. She was really independent. She owned her own sexuality. And when you say the women were calling the shots, I think it was more just like, it was very two-way, you know. She was just equal and held her own whenever she had sex. And my favorite line was when she had sex with the guy who was a bit of a dick. And he said, you know, anal play is very underrated for heterosexual men. And I thought, brilliant, she's got out her dildo and she's indulged in maybe some pegging or some kind of rimming or something. And it was just a little throwaway line. You didn't see it, you didn't have to, but it was kind of alluded to. And I thought, hotbed. And Fleabag, which is on the BBC, and it's written by Phoebe Waller-Bridge, and it stars her as well. Series 2, on currently as we speak. And we loved series 1 because she had a lot of sex. Some of it was problematic sex, but all sex on screen doesn't need to be amazing. It doesn't need to be brilliant sex. It just needs to be realistic and have some kind of depth to it or humor, and not just be that kind of what you just said, the kind of three thrusts and we'll have a simultaneous orgasm. Which, by the way, the numbers of having a simultaneous orgasm are quite low. I think it's maybe 2/3 of people say they've had one. And actually, men report higher numbers than women, which goes to show a little bit of faking going on. But Fleabag's got some complicated sex in it. It's also got a point where she masturbates to a video of Barack Obama, which I think was really fun. Second series, she's decided not to have sex. That's as far as I've got with it, but there's still a lot of sexual feelings happening.
There's an amazing, because there's just a burgeoning relationship with a priest, which is played by Andrew Scott, which I think we shared on our feed this week. And it's just, he's really sexy. What was his character in, because he's in...
Moriarty.
Yeah, that's it.
In Sherlock.
Yeah, and he's kind of got this real devilish, which is quite weird, obviously, because he plays a priest, but he's got this very sort of naughty, transgressive kind of face where you just kind of think, oh, actually, he's up to some kind of... I was going to say nuisance, but he is. He's kind of got that naughty look about him.
He's an Irish charmer with a little twinkle.
Oh, and the Irish accent, I'm sorry, but that is very... I know we shouldn't always objectify men, but I'm sure he wouldn't mind being objectified a little bit anyway.
So please follow us on at the Hotbed Collective. Please follow Rose McGowan. We'll put a link to her Instagram. I mean, you probably are already following her. I don't know why someone with a million followers needs a shout out on the Hotbed podcast.
No, why doesn't she give us a bloody shout out, for fuck's sake?
Well, she might. You never know. She did our podcast. She did Sentimental Garbage. And
did you do a selfie with her?
Yep.
So hopefully she's going to share that selfie.
Yep. And she's going to tell everyone about the day she met an actual podcast star.
I think you and me need to be a bit more pushy. If we're going to take this up to the next level, you've got your foot in the door.
Yep.
Now we've got to go right up. This year has got to be right up there.
Ratchet up these listens. So listeners, tell everyone about the Hotbed podcast. And we will see you next week. We actually won't see you because, well, we will. I mean, you don't see people in podcasts anyway. But next week's episode is a live episode that we recorded on Galentine's Day at White City House. It features me, Anarchy Somerville, also Dr. Karen Gurney at The Sex Doctor on Instagram, Bowel Babe, Deborah James, who is just so inspiring and wonderful, Nadia Deem from Appointment AM, who talks all about getting busy with yourself, and Karen Hobbs from The Eve Appeal being very funny about cervical cancer. Yes, it's possible.
It is possible.
She was hilarious, wasn't she?
She was very, very good. Very inspiring.
A little disclaimer before next week's episode. Anarchy had literally only just had a baby. I mean, she practically was in her hospital gowns.
I bought my pants with me. I bought my my post-birth pants.
Not the actual ones.
Not the actual ones that I wore. I didn't bring my placenta.
No.
I had
a recent bereavement, and I can hear, when I edited it back, I could hear in our voices that we were a little bit shaken and not tired. Our normal bouncy selves. So bear with us. That's next week's episode. I hope you enjoy it.
Bye. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoyed our episode. We can't get by on little crumbs, though, so please do like, subscribe, and write a review. Only write a review if it's a nice one, though. Don't bother if you hate it, and don't listen to us anymore, I guess. And yes, please do, because it makes a huge difference, and thanks a lot.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.